Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Simply Bitcoin IRL. Before we jump into the show, I do want to give a shout out to the Bitcoin company that makes this show possible, BitcoinWell.com. Guys, it's a publicly traded company based out of Canada. They just expanded to all 50 states. It's the first Bitcoin on-ramp in the U.S. to make it Bitcoin self-custody by default. That's right. You can't buy Bitcoin on Bitcoin Well unless you're going to take self-custody, which perfectly aligns with the Simply Bitcoin ethos, the separation of money and state. So check out BitcoinWell.com today. Anyways, no more delay. I do want to bring up my very special guest, Lawrence Lepard. So happy to have him back on the show. I saw him in person. In Naples.
Nice to be on your show. Yeah, we just saw you recently here in Naples, and that was a lot of fun. So thanks for having me back.
And that was quite an interesting panel, to say the least. We had some interesting characters on there.
There sure were. Bitcoin is a wide collection of people. It's great. It's a big tent.
Absolutely. It's a big tent. Saley, so Larry, we are at the part of the movie where the central bankers are saying the quiet part out loud. I have a clip. I'm sure you saw it on Bitcoin Twitter.
It's amazing, right?
And it's pretty crazy. So I'm going to play it and then we'll react to it.
You know, the fiscal challenges, et cetera, that are there. So very focused on being cost effective. We actually fund ourselves and then work out what dividend is needed to pay. So it's a great business to be in, central banking. Print money and people believe it, touch wood, it's a slightly different beast.
That's pretty bad.
That's amazing. Who was that? Was that the Australian guy?
That was the head of the New Zealand Central Bank.
New Zealand. Yeah, I love this part. Unbelievable. Yeah, we make it up as we go along, and we just print the money. It's no big deal.
But I mean, this is what we've been saying, Bitcoin Twitter, for so many years now at this point, that central bankers are doing exactly the thing that he just admitted. That level of hubris, I mean, that level of self-confidence of saying we just print the money and people believe it. That's pretty crazy. Like, that's pretty nuts.
Yeah, it's completely nuts. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, it was also interesting, as I'm sure most people saw, we had Jay Powell say, you know, we're on an unsustainable fiscal path. And it's kind of like, that's the quiet part out loud too. Well, duh, you know, that was my pinned tweet until somebody hacked my Twitter account. By the way, I saw a couple of questions in the side here. I'm having a real hard time with Twitter. Anybody has any suggestions on how to get a live person at Twitter or get some attention? I'm all ears, because, I was almost SIM swapped this weekend, and a malicious actor got a hold of my email and then used it to jump my Twitter. I got the email back, but I can't get my Twitter back. So just an aside.
Yeah. So if anyone knows someone at Twitter, hit me up over Twitter DM. You know, I'll reach out to Larry and
how the system works or whatever. I mean, I just get an automated reply that says, you appear to still have control of your account. I'm like, no, I don't. The malicious actor does.
Yeah, that's what happened. A lot of these platforms too, like YouTube and Google, right? It's like all the support. It's just this AI, or it's someone.
That's how Elon cut costs. He got rid of all the support people. There's nobody there. I've spoken to Mike Alford. He put me to some guys. I mean, I'm talking to a bunch of different people, but nobody's really been able to solve it yet. I got a lawyer who wants me to. I've been trying to reach Mark Moss too. I got a lawyer who wants me to pay him $5,000, says it might work, but
it's crazy. So if anyone knows on YouTube and Twitter,
help me. I'm Twitter locked out.
Let's help Larry get back his Twitter. So I actually have the video of Jerome Powell. Let's check it out.
Oh, good.
The U.S. is on an unsustainable fiscal path. The U.S. federal government's on an unsustainable fiscal path. And that just means that the debt is growing faster than the economy.
I have the sense this worries you very much.
Over the long run, of course it does. You know, we're borrowing from future generations. It's time for us to get back to putting a priority on fiscal sustainability, and sooner is better than later.
So, I mean, is he admitting to the debt spiral, Larry?
Hey, close. It's pretty close. I mean, he read my pinned tweet. It's funny though. He says it. We've got this problem, but you know, sooner rather than later, and it doesn't appear to be a problem now. I mean, maybe he's signaling a little bit that there's a conflict between he and Yellen, which wouldn't surprise me. A lot of people have said that. You know, it's surprising. I mean, and that's part of what these people do. They say things that are true and that make them seem credible and like they understand what's going on. But, you know, the next question to him, you know, if Paley had been any good, would have been, okay, well, doesn't that represent a problem right here, right now? And, you know, of course, that question didn't get asked. And, of course, it does represent a problem right here, right now, which is what all of us have been screaming from the rooftops for 5 years. You know, the money printer go burr, and it has no choice but to continue to go burr or the whole thing collapses. I don't know. Maybe he was trying to send a subtle message to Congress there or to Yellen. It's unclear. You know, I don't know how all these minds work. I mean, I don't know.
The church.
I don't have a lot of regard for these people.
The church of fiat. So Larry. So let's talk about that, right? So you have this banker in New Zealand saying the choir part out loud. You have Jerome Powell saying the choir part out loud as well, right? Right. So, you know, these are things that we've all been speculating in the community. We've all been saying that these things are happening, but now the people themselves are saying this is happening. What is the long-term play here? What happens 5-10 years from now, and how can individuals protect themselves?
Well, I think you and I both know the long-term play. The long-term play is to own financial assets that can't be printed. And the two, the best financial asset that can't be printed is Bitcoin, and the best physical asset that can't be printed is gold. And or silver, because the government can't, you know, make more of them by decree. You know, so it's a mess. That's not a fax machine, actually. That's a scanner. Fax machine is long gone. It's unclear. It's unclear what the next stage is, but it's very clear what the longer term stage is. And I say unclear what the next stage is because they're very good at putting the, you know, putting things back in the can. You know, I mean, Silicon Valley Bank blew up. They figured it out and put it back in the can. They've got a lot of different tools to lie to us and fool us and prevent people from doing what they need to do and to keep them, quote unquote, in the system. And by the way, they're trying to strengthen those tools. I mean, Elizabeth Warren is trying to tell us we can't self-custody and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So, and yet, you know, if we're intelligent citizens, what we've got to do is we've got to realize that the government is a criminal enterprise. And that, you know, we need to take countermeasures. And frankly, Bitcoin is the best countermeasure ever invented. And, you know, as my friend Chris Iron says, it's a slippery fish. The government can't hang on to it. I love that statement because it really is. You know, if you've got your 12 words, you know, good luck, government, taxing it, getting a hold of it, stealing it, whatever, debasing it. None of those things are going to happen. And, yep. You know, it's showing up in the price right now. I mean, this is a pleasant surprise. I mean, I thought the price would go up this year. I had no idea we'd get to this level, you know, even before the halving had hit. So I have great hopes for what might happen after the halving, right?
Do you think that has to do with the tremendous amount of inflows coming from the
I'm seeing this
and it's every single day BlackRock.
It's growing, right?
It's insane. It's crazy. Yeah, it's like every day they purchase like 5,000 Bitcoin. Like every single day.
Since I'm off of Twitter now, I don't get as much flow out of there. But Fred Krueger has done a great job on Twitter of keeping track, and it's actually accelerating. I mean, the last thing I saw was showing day on day, ETFs are actually buying more and more. And this is not surprising to us. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of RIA money. There's trillions, somewhere between 40 and 100 trillion of RIA money. They could not access Bitcoin before. I mean, they could if they were going to buy GBTC, but that was a little too esoteric for people to do it. So as a result, they what they did was they sat on their hands, and now, of course, they can buy it. And so they're starting to slowly but surely educate their clients. Yeah, I love this chart. Isn't this great? I just love it. Right?
Thousands of thousands. You know that BlackRock hit 100. They're about to hit 100,000 Bitcoin. You know how long it took MicroStrategy to do that?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Right. Exactly. I mean, well, and here's the other thing that's very interesting to me. I mean, I saw a great tweet the other day that said something along the lines of, you know, the ETFs, the nine ETFs now own 1% of, you know, the total available Bitcoin outstanding, and it was 210,000, right? And, you know, gosh, I mean, in that buying of 1%, what do we go before the ETF was announced? Where were we? 38, 40-ish? I mean, you know, they bought 1% and they shoved it up, you know, 10 grand. I mean, that's impressive, right? You know, so what happens? And they're just going to keep coming. They're just going to keep coming. So, you know, and I mean, the sovereign wealth guys are going to buy it. I went to Dubai about a week or two ago for this thing called Satoshi's Roundtable, which was interesting, although there were a lot of shit coiners there. But there are also a lot of wealthy Arab, you know, oil-related guys there. And, you know, wait until these guys really figure out that this is better than gold. I mean, some of them have. But, I mean, there's just so many big, big pools of money. And once they, you know, there's just not enough of this stuff to go around. And so I'm beginning to think Samson's, maybe he's onto something here. I mean, maybe we do go to $1 million on this run. You know, I certainly, you know, 100,000 feels like a no-brainer, you know, and I don't know. I mean, is it 2, 3, 4? I mean, who knows? But all I know is I'm really glad I got the coins I've got, and I'm, you know, I'm not selling any of them. Not right here, right now. And I'm not sure I'll ever sell any of them, but you know, I'd need a significantly higher price. I mean, significantly higher to pry a few out of my hands. So it's pretty amazing to me what's going on.
100%. And I think a lot of people feel the same way you do. I'm not handing over my Bitcoin to Larry Fink and Co.
Oh, there's no way. There's absolutely no way. Yeah. Yeah.
So, a couple months ago, Lawrence, I had the privilege and honor to have you and Caitlin Long on the show. And then we did a debate, and we had Foss, and we had yourself, and we had Mr. Lavish.
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially the debate was around, you know, the rehypothecation, right? Yeah. So, you know, that's a big theory as to why a lot of people believe that the gold price is suppressed.
No question.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the rehypothecation aspect of it. So, you know, we are getting a little bit of a pump. You know, supposedly they're buying this much Bitcoin. Is that still a concern of yours? Or,
it's not a big concern. I mean, I'll give you my view on this whole, you know, paper Bitcoin argument. Okay. I mean, and I see extremists on one side. I see people who say, look, you know, we can see it all on chain and there's absolutely no way there can ever be paper Bitcoin. Those people are wrong. There are a lot of futures. There will be more futures and, you know, and derivative contracts, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, any contract that impacts the market price, you know, or that relates to buying and selling can impact the market price. So, you know, so it's not as simple as there won't ever be paper manipulation. But having said that, it's a lot harder to manipulate this stuff than it is gold. And that's because, one, the paper markets and gold are a lot bigger and a lot deeper. Two, the GLD ETF, when it came out, they were allowed to do a lot of funny things like have counterparties and buy futures and sell futures. And, you know, they could, GLD, for all you know, has bought gold from the future Lehman Brothers that claims they have the gold, but they don't have it. So GLD became a mechanism for creating paper gold, in my opinion. I read the prospectuses, a couple of them, anyway, not all nine, on these particular ETFs. And what I think happened is that they're much tighter and they, you know, so I think that Fidelity, particularly, who I trust, you know, they're going to be audited. And so they're going to have to show the coins they bought. They're going to have to show those addresses. And so it's going to be harder, you know, for people to play games here. But to think that they're not going to play games, I think that's naive. I think that, you know, you look at a group like BlackRock, you look at Wall Street and how they operate. There's always the potential, if there is a way to rehypothecate or to create paper claims, they will do it. And, you know, having said that, you know, at the sovereign level, I think in the gold market, one of the things that happened is that there was a lot of paper being created through the Caymans. And I think it was the BIS and the central banks were actually doing it at critical points to try and hold the gold price down because they knew that the gold price was the canary for monetary debasement. And so, but those sovereigns could take unlimited losses, right? So, you know, those unlimited losses, it didn't matter. They could print the difference. You know, but gold never went up 5x in 18 months the way Bitcoin has. And so this is going to be a much harder thing to mess with. But I think to assume that they cannot or will not try to mess with it is naive. I think that Wall Street operates, you know, on a criminal basis. And so there's always the possibility that they will try to mess with it. And whether they'll be successful or not is unclear. But I think it's clearly an issue. I think Caitlin agrees with me on that. I mean, she thinks that there's some chance some G-SIB's going to get out over their skis on this thing, messing with it and blow up. I don't know if I'd go that far, but But I do know that the, you know, if you go and you look at the futures market, you know, futures and derivatives market for Bitcoin, and I'm drawing a blank on the name of the company that keeps track of all the chain analytics, but it's one of the really good ones. They'll show you how it, you can get their charts. They'll show you how it's growing. The futures market is growing. So that's an issue.
So if you could explain it for our audience, Larry, how, like, what is the mechanism in which the future market is used in order to suppress the price of Bitcoin potentially?
Well, I mean, just most simply, it's paper Bitcoin is like let's just use a really easy example that we can all relate to. We all know Sam Bankman-Fried ran FTX. There were FTX customers who thought they were buying Bitcoin. They had an account at FTX with US dollars in it, and they said, okay, you know, I want to buy a Bitcoin. Fine. So they took, you know, whatever the money was at that time, 20 grand, said, buy me a Bitcoin. And Sam said, yep, okay, fine. You got a Bitcoin in your account. Sam never went on chain and bought the Bitcoin. So that's paper Bitcoin. So that was legitimate dollar-based demand for Bitcoin that got made at FTX. And FTX just created an account entry, like a bank, and said, oh yeah, you own a Bitcoin now. And so all they were really doing was, and of course, you know, they weren't going to screw that guy. If Bitcoin went up and the guy sold it, they were going to give him the gain, the dollar gain. But they didn't hold the underlying. You know what I mean? They did not hold the underlying. And that's paper Bitcoin. That's what I'm talking about, where somebody, you know, the price ought to be set by balancing the supply and demand, right? And so, you know, if somebody takes in dollars, real dollars, and says they're selling you Bitcoin, but doesn't actually have the Bitcoin they sold you, they just sold you a claim on Bitcoin. And this is why, yeah, it's not your, you know, not your keys, not your cheese, right? Then they've sold you paper Bitcoin and they've suppressed the price because your dollars sent in should have been part of, you know, they should have had to try and compete for an on-chain coin and they didn't. And so that's really how price suppression works.
Gotcha. Okay. So another thing, Larry, that I've noticed, right, which is, and I ran into this problem kind of, I would say, by mistake, by accident, but my parents have been in Bitcoin since 2016. When I got in, my parents came with me. Okay. The first 2 or 3 years, they call it that I was a maniac. Now they're like, end the Fed. But they,
you wore, but you fully orange pilled them.
The number go up. Does it work?
It does have an effect, doesn't it? They're loving the corn. They bought it 5,000. I know I am.
Yeah. So my question to you is, what I've noticed is if I told my mom, for example, mom, you know, send me some Bitcoin, she'd be like, I have no idea how to do that. Why? Because her Bitcoin is in self-custody, which is what I would recommend to my friends and family. But what I've noticed is that I end up becoming this de facto tech support type of guy where if anything happens and they need to access their Bitcoin, you know, call Nico, right? To try to figure it out. So, you know, you have a bunch of clients. Do you recommend self-custody to them? Is that something that
I do? I do ultimately. Yeah. I mean, well, first of all, I kind of test where they are on the technology and the understanding scale, right? And if they're extremely low on the technology and understanding scale, and they're not particularly worried about, you know, the government taking over all these different companies and grabbing, you know, doing a 6102, you know, I say, hey, buy the ETF, right? You'll get price exposure. Yeah, you'll have to pay tax on it, et cetera, et cetera. Just understand the risk you're taking. And for, you know, for your average boomer, that may not be such a bad way to go. I don't personally like that way. And I explained to them the risk is that, you know, in a 6102, the government can go and grab all those ETFs and say, this is ours now, or we're taxing it at 90% or whatever. You don't really own the coins. You own a claim to the coins delivered to you via Fidelity or BlackRock. But I think in general, Fidelity in particular, I don't trust BlackRock, but, you know, I trust Fidelity that, you know, they are going to deliver what they say. But there are other clients I have who, you know, are with me in terms of full conspiracy theory on all the stuff the government could do. And they say, all right, I want a self-custody. I want to be able to get on an airplane and leave the country with my coins. And so I take them through the process of self-custody. You know, in fact, this weekend I'm going to spend some time on a Zoom call with a gentleman who's one of my clients, and I'm going to take him through how to set up his Trezor, you know, and get his words and, you know, I'll have him go through it a bunch of times, you know, send a little bit of money over there, wipe it out, restore it, send it, wipe it out, restore it. Okay. And then I'll send him a template for what I call the treasure map, which is the paper he's going to write to his wife and kids that says, this is our Bitcoin. This is where it is. This is what you should do when I get hit by a bus. You know, and then that template and that treasure map needs to be incredibly secure, as you and I both know. So, I think that's a better solution, but to be fair, I mean, some people don't want to go that far. And if they, you know, if they're just, I mean, as opposed to owning stocks and bonds, you know, buying a Bitcoin ETF, it can, you know, can be it's a damn good step in the right direction. Let's put it that way. You know, it's not perfect, as we all know, but it's a damn good step in the right direction.
100%. I 100% agree with you. And it seems like Wall Street can't resist Bitcoin's incentives, right?
Right.
From 2017, Larry Fink saying Bitcoin is an index of money laundering.
Exactly.
To him, like advocating for this on legacy financial media, you're like, okay, we've come a long way.
Hey, look, 20 bips of a couple $1 trillion is a real number, and Larry's not going to miss that boat, right?
Exactly.
It's stunning. Yeah.
100%. It's stunning and it's unbelievable, you know, like, you know, from 2016 to 2017 to now, you know, whether it's El Salvador, Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy, what they've done is just insane.
It's unbelievable. Right? Yeah, I love Saylor. I watched all his videos this weekend. It's just so great. I mean, he's a genius. It's really great.
100%. So that happened, right? So the ETF inflows have been crazy. And then there's this very big news that came out of Canada that I think is as equally as significant. So apparently this was a conservative all-in-one portfolio, and they announced that they're going to allocate between 1-3% of that quote-unquote conservative portfolio into Bitcoin. Now, my question to you, Larry, is what happens when that 1% allocation outperforms the rest of the portfolio? You know, how high are they going to increase?
Well, that's it. And as you and I both know, I mean, how many people have you orange-pilled and they started off with one or two, and then the more they learned about it, they just kept adding? I mean, you know, the demand here is just going to be insane. It's going to be absolutely insane. And so, I've never been as bullish as I am on a financial asset as this financial asset. The asymmetry is just crazy. I mean, wait till we take out 68 or 69. I mean, the FOMO is going to be silly. And the thing I think people don't understand, you know it and I know it, is just how little of this stuff is for sale. Everyone says, oh, it's a $1 trillion market cap. Well, no, not all of it's for sale. You know, I mean, I saw a stat the other day. It was like 79% of it hadn't moved within 6 months. I think that's correct. I mean, good Lord. So there's really a much smaller available supply. As more and more people come to it, I mean, and the other thing that you see in asset management is that people basically chase performance. And so this thing, I mean, it was up 150% last year. And once you see things, you know, outperforming everything else, you increase your allocation. Sharpe ratio is higher than nearly anything else. I think it depends on what time frame you use, but I think in general it has one of the highest Sharpe ratios out there. And so, you know, it's going to get to the point where it's going to be irresponsible not to have some. And I think that's the other thing that's going to happen. I mean, you know, you're going to see people talking about it. People are going to tell their friends how well they did in it. And you're going to get guys calling their financial advisor, their RIA, and saying, hey, do we own any of this? No. Well, my friend owns it. It's doing really well. Why not? And then the RIA is going to say, oh, shit. Okay, well, I don't want to say no anymore. All right, I'll put 2% in there, you know, or I'll put 5% in there. And then when the, you know, the 2 or the 5% doubles, it becomes a bigger percentage. And people are going to start saying, well, how come we were so light? How come we didn't have more? I mean, you know how this thing goes, right? I mean, you know, and eventually it's Gresham's law, right? I mean, as we know, we've talked about it. We dream about the concept that eventually, you know, it's going to be, you know, this is the only thing to own. And at that point, you've got hyper-Bitcoinization. And that is coming. But the issue is, you know, just the time scale. And that's hard to figure out. But it's coming. I kind of tend to think it's coming before 2030, 2035. I mean, it could happen really quickly. I mean, one of the things I think is very interesting, Nico, that we haven't really talked about is how quickly things happen in this environment and how social media has changed the rules of the game. And let me just give you a cite an example that I think is particularly relevant. You know, Silicon Valley Bank was fine until it wasn't. I mean, we had a virtual internet-based bank run. They had $45 billion worth of deposits leave in one day, based on a panic started by some big Silicon Valley venture capitalists. And so, you know, I'm not suggesting anything like that is coming to Bitcoin overnight. But what I am suggesting is that, you know, in the world that we live in with social media and how news changes quickly, I mean, you know, if Bitcoin went through 100,000 on its way to, you know, to much higher numbers, I mean, you know, it could happen faster than we think, is I guess the point I'm trying to make. I mean, I was shocked by how quickly Silicon Valley Bank failed. I mean, you know, they sold off some bonds very quickly. A few people realized that, you know, their balance sheet was a mess. They had negative equity. A couple of venture guys figured it out, called a few other venture guys. They spread the word. And suddenly, you know, within 3 days, they were bankrupt. You know, all the deposits had fled. It's like, holy shit. So, you know, my point is, you know, can you imagine the same kind of thing going on when everyone comes to the same conclusion about the U.S. Treasury? You know, which ultimately, as Jerome Powell just told us, they will come to that conclusion unless we solve the problem at some point, right?
Yeah, 100%. And I remember, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was another, they bailed them out, right? And that goes to the original quote in the Genesis block of Bitcoin. Right. You know, how many bailout, what number bailout break, are we on? So that was the second one. What number are we? Do you know what number we're on?
I don't. I didn't hear the first one. What are you talking about? What do you mean?
So on the Genesis block of Bitcoin, yeah. Right? It Satoshi quoted a newspaper at the time, right? And from the date, and the headline of that newspaper said, "Chancer on the brink of the second bailout for bank." And this was back in 2009.
Right.
So my question to you is, what number bailout are we on?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The second bailout. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So
anyways, and I do want to pull up, which I think is a great kind of visualization of this, which is the interest rates that we're in, right? Because you hear about these crazy numbers, you hear about, you know, the deficit, the spending, all of that stuff. But I think once you visualize it, I think it's a little bit different. So I'm gonna read you this number, Lawrence, and then you tell me what it means, right? So on the very bottom, it says U.S. unfunded liabilities. The number is currently at $212 trillion. How much money is that?
It's a lot of damn money. I mean, it's you know, it's look, the deficit this year was $2 trillion if you count, you know, the if you count what was done with the student loan thing, and it's growing. I mean, the deficit in the last quarter was $500 billion, and I think this year it'll probably be 2.5, maybe $3 trillion. It's out of control, Nico. It's absolutely out of control. And that's what the world is coming to realize. I mean, I think, you know, Preston and Luke have done great jobs on Twitter of showing it, these charts of, you know, BTC compared to TLT, or, you know, gold compared to TLT, or the stock market. I mean, we're kind of, you know, the thing that surprised me the most the past year is how well the stock market's done. And I think what's going on is we're kind of in a mini crack up boom. You know, the Treasury just has the pedal to the metal on spending. I mean, it is out of control. In my last quarterly report, and you go to my website and get it for free, there's a really interesting chart in that report that shows that, you know, the U.S. federal government was spending about $4 trillion up until the COVID crisis. COVID crisis jacked it up to 6 and then 7 at its peak, okay? It's now, and so you would think, okay, the COVID crisis is now over, right? So maybe federal spending would trend back down towards 4? No. Federal spending are still 6. Part of that's higher interest rates. But the point is, and they kicked the debt can into January of next year. So there's no debt limit until January of next year. And so, you know, what Biden and these other people are doing to the federal government, in order to try and stay in power and keep getting reelected, they are just spending out of control. And that's why the government, that's why everything is holding together as well as it's holding together. You know, I mean, a lot of these jobs are being created, or government jobs. It's kind of amazing. And And so as a result, you know, the stock market, you know, and the bond market, it just keeps going. And, you know, it's amazing to me, but eventually everybody's going to figure it out. And when they do, they're going to come for the safe havens. And, you know, Bitcoin is the number one safe haven by a country mile. You know, gold is kind of the secondary safe haven. I'm kind of pissed at it recently. It hasn't really been doing its job. It's knocking on an all-time high, but it still hasn't broken out. I think Bitcoin will be at an all-time high probably by midsummer, you know, if not sooner, at the rate it's going. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
I 100% agree. And, you know, you have the halving that's coming up.
Yeah, right.
And you have the inflow. It's just like the perfect storm of the ETF inflows and then the halving coming up. And it creates this environment where you're just like, holy cow, I don't know, this is going to be crazy. But I do want to kind of double back to the point that you were making earlier, which is we were all expecting a recession.
Yeah.
And I guess it's delayed. I guess, you know, did they pull off a soft landing, Larry?
Yeah, well, yes and no. I mean, it's delayed, it's rigged. I mean, we're expecting a recession based on the, you know, the 210 inversion and everything else. And you know, it's a different economy than it used to be. And it's not to say we're not going to eventually get a recession, but I think that the people in power recognize that if they were to try and clamp things down, it would all collapse. And so they've got their foot on the accelerator of spending. And I mean, it's what, you know, people are calling fiscal dominance, which is to say that even though interest rates are higher, it doesn't matter because we've got all these infrastructure bills. We've got all this spending. We've got all this defense spending. You know, we're sending money to Ukraine, which really means we're sending money to U.S. defense contractors, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's the piece that I missed and that a lot of us missed. I mean, yes, we should have had a recession. And by the way, for the average person, we kind of have had a recession. It's been rough. They haven't lost their job, but they've certainly suffered in terms of the purchasing power because, you know, the cost of everything they do has gone up since COVID, has gone up 20%, and their wages haven't kept pace, you know? So it's a hell of a mess. It's a hell of a broken system. And anybody who's disgusted with it, the way I am and the way you are, you know, needs to recognize that buying Bitcoin is not only an act of financial self-defense, but it's also an act of financial warfare, and that we got to destroy their system for, you know, so that our kids will live in a better country. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible. But it, you know, it's the sharpest spear, and we're all charging up the hill, you know, ready to kill the central bank. I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, and does it, when we still have a lot of work to do, Larry, as well, because I'm seeing, you know, and I completely agree, you know, Bitcoin is the death knell, so to speak, to the central bank, not only from the fact that it's a better system in itself, but it also kind of shines a light of truth on their insanity, right? Like when, if we didn't have Bitcoin and we heard that video coming out of New Zealand, right, we would say, you know, this is kind of messed up. Now we have a tool, right? Yeah. And that tool is like, yeah, I hear that video, I'm like, I'm very glad I have Bitcoin, right?
Absolutely.
Like you
absolutely
have fun with that.
And we had a tool before, but it was kind of a broken tool because, you know, it was hard to verify and it was in a bunch of vaults and there was a bunch of paper around it. I mean, look, we had this tool in the 70s. I mean, you know, they were inflating like crazy in the 70s and, you know, gold was calling them out on it, right? And because they violated the gold standard in 71. And, you know, but they managed to suppress gold and get it back in the can, and they didn't have so much debt that Volcker couldn't make huge positive real interest rates. And so as a result, you know, they held everything together. But, you know, sure enough, that problem's come back to bite them in the ass again, as those of us who are sound money advocates always knew it would. But to be fair, you know, it's taken my entire career to watch it unfold. I mean, it's been, and that's why some people say, well, I wish this stuff would happen tomorrow, you know, and, you know, I mean, look, I've been waiting for 30 years. So to me, if this takes another 5 or 6, that's nothing. I mean, and I'm pleasantly surprised by how well Bitcoin is doing. But, you know, look, we could wake up tomorrow and Bitcoin could, for some reason, I doubt it very much, but for some reason it could be down. I wouldn't care. I don't know what's going on with my dog here. I'll try and do it. Can you get the dog out? Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it's a good tool.
Absolutely. It's a tool of self-defense, but it's also a weapon in a
way. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, and the thing that's so great about it, I've said this many times. I mean, look, I've been a gold bug forever. I was a sound money guy forever, you know, before you guys were born. I mean, you know, and I've been fighting this battle and losing, to be frank, for a long time. And it was so cool when Bitcoin showed up and then Safe wrote the book. And then your whole generation starts quoting, you know, von Mises to me. I'm like, holy shit. How did this happen? You know, the reinforcements have arrived. You know, I got all these 20 and 30 year olds who totally fucking get it. You know, and you guys in the fourth turning terms, you guys are going to be the hero generation to set it right. So it's very, for an old gold bug sound money advocate like myself, it's been very, very, you know, encouraging to see, you know, this smart young generation jump on it and get it. And, you know, and look, I mean, they've got the power because they've got a lot of fiat money. They've been around a long time. They control the levers. They control the system. But we've got the numbers and we've got the sharper spear. So, you know, we're going to win. That's all there is to it.
We are going to win 100%. And Larry, it sounds like you were vindicated. It's vindication.
Yeah, it feels that way a little bit. I mean, it's, you know, I'll feel a lot better when Ben Bernanke is, you know, in the history books along with John Law. I mean, I think he's the most irresponsible, fraudulent central banker ever. And, you know, there's just no doubt in my mind that he deserves to, you know, be remembered very, very poorly. You know, that's not the case yet, but when this thing goes full Weimar, which it will, you know, people are going to understand who did it to them. And, his helicopter money speech, you know, from 2002, that was the most irresponsible thing I've ever seen any government official do ever. And that's a pretty tall order to be the most irresponsible. And he did it. And, but, you know, and he set it loose and here we are, you know, but, you know, history's going to get it right because we're going to write history because Saylor's probably going to be the richest guy in the world. And I like that because Saylor's basically a libertarian and, yep. You know, I think he'll fight hard to create a fairer system.
100%. And we're slowly starting to see that in the political sphere too.
Oh yeah.
I said this jokingly, but in a way it was also serious. I said, guys, now we have the roadmap. Now we know how a libertarian gets elected into office. All you need is 140% inflation. Exactly. And of course I'm talking about Javier Milei in Argentina.
That's a great comparison. That's a great comparison. And you know, frankly, I mean, Max called it, and I'm not so sure he's wrong. I mean, I know people, including my partner, who think that there's just no way it could happen. There's a chance Kennedy wins this election. I know that sounds pretty extreme, but nobody thought Trump was going to win, and I did when he was running in the first time around. And, you know, I could see very easily where, you know, we end up with nobody has 270 electoral votes. It gets thrown into the House, and it's kind of a broker deal that, you know, basically either side is going to contest the election. You know, the Dems aren't going to believe the Republicans won. The Republicans are going to win the Dems won. And, you know, maybe the only way to settle that difference would be to put Kennedy in there. And, you know, he ain't perfect, but boy, he's a damn sight better than those other two. So we'll just have to see. That's just a speculation on my part. It's probably not going to happen, but.
I mean, but it doesn't matter. It does matter in the sense that, like, the significance of it, right?
Right.
Even if it's a low probability, is there's a non-zero chance that we might have a Bitcoiner in the White House.
Well, that's
in
right.
2025.
That's right. And even if he doesn't win, I mean, here you've got a guy who's kind of talking our language and gets it. I mean, and he's on a, you know, now they're probably not going to let him on the debates. They haven't given him Secret Service coverage. You know, I was talking to a guy who was very close to him the other day, and he said he was talking to Bobby about it, and they were joking around. I said, yeah, they lost. They blew it. They blew their chance to kill me. They had to kill me a lot earlier, because now if they do it, it'll be totally obvious. So, you know, he's going to make a lot of noise. And again, you know, that's really, Nico, what really changes the world for all of us. I mean, there are things that we know incredibly well and clearly, and we're right about. We just need a quorum of the country to know that. And, you know, I've seen things, and before they took away Twitter from me, I've seen things that show 80% of the country does not trust the government. I mean, that's a huge number. 80%. Probably the 20% that do work for the government. Right? So, I mean, it's just a matter of time, right? So, now, you know, sadly, they don't trust the government, but they don't know what, they don't understand that this is the solution yet, you know, and that's sad. I mean, it's still a small percentage that get that this is the solution. And we really are very, very early here. I mean, I was an investor in the internet. I mean, this still, I still feel like we're in 1995 or 1997, you know, 95 is when we went from green screen, you know, lines of code to, you know, a browser. You know, the first Netscape browser came out, but you know, it really didn't get going kind of around 2000 or so that the whole thing caught on. So it's early. It's very early here in this whole thing. And anybody, I mean, people are going to be like, you know, you own a whole coin. What the hell are you talking about? How can you possibly own a whole coin? Well, I do, you know, I mean, the way I think about people, I was at this conference and I sat down with some guy. He was mining him on his Apple II when he was, you know, much younger. And he said, yeah, you know, and then I bought a bunch too. And he says, I think my average cost was about $2 a coin. And I'm just sitting there thinking, holy shit. You know, I am so jealous.
it's so crazy. And it's so crazy to just kind of look back,
right,
and think about a time where, you know, 2016, 2017, it's like, yeah, under $1,000 Bitcoin. And you think about it now, you're like, oh my God, I wish.
Yeah,
I
wish, right. Well, and, you know? And by the way, Nico, I mean, when it's $1 million a coin and somebody says, you mean to tell me you were buying corn at $20,000? What the fuck? How is that possible? I mean, our grandkids will certainly say that, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's just no doubt in my mind. So, you know, but what's the path? Who knows? I mean, that's the hard part to, you know, but it doesn't really matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. And as I say to all my potential investors and people who are looking at it, I just say, you just can't. I mean, with my friends, I just implore them. It's like, you can't have zero. This thing is so goddamn asymmetric that, you know, even if you just put $5,000, I mean, figure a number you can afford to lose and put it in there, right? And you know, I think you'll wake up in 20 years and be really glad you did. So,
yeah, I agree. So what's your take, Larry, on the diminishing returns narrative? I believe this cycle we're gonna totally break that. But you know, if you were to follow
me, because I'm not sure I follow what you're saying when you say diminishing returns. I've been off Twitter now for a week.
Yeah. So the diminishing returns theory is essentially, you know, every single price cycle since Bitcoin's inception has had diminishing returns, right? You know, you apply the law of big numbers, it kind of makes sense. But if we were to follow that pattern, it would put Bitcoin at cycle peak at 70K, 75K, 80K. I think personally, and maybe I'm overly bullish, I think the diminishing returns theory is BS.
I do too.
And the reasons I believe it's BS is because of Bitcoin's absolute scarcity, the ETFs that are coming in, and the halving that's coming.
I completely
agree. It's going to create this like the stars align type of situation.
I completely agree. And also just general tipping point theory. I mean, I think, you know, look at Malcolm Gladwell. What is it? When you get to 10% penetration of something, you rapidly go to 90%. And I don't know where we are worldwide, but in terms of assets and dollars, I don't think we're even close to 10%. And so, you know, as a sense of that, I completely reject the diminishing returns. One thing that was a little interesting, though, I think the last peak, the double peak in the 60s, I think that was a little lower than it should have been. And I think that might have been because of the Chinese mining. I mean, there might have been a lot of reasons for that. But, you know, one thing is, it's a wild animal. You never really know what it's going to do. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, where does this peak? I mean, the other thing I do think will happen too is, I think as we get more institutional adoption, the adoption gets more widespread, I don't think we're going to see any more 90% drawdowns. I don't think we're going to see any more 80% drawdowns. I doubt we're going to see a 70% drawdown. We could probably see a 60% drawdown. I mean, I could easily see this thing running to, call it 400K, you know, on this round, on this halving. And then pulling back to what's, you know, I don't know, down 60% from that. Was it 240 or something? I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows? But it's hard to say. I guess that's not a full 60% drawdown. 60% would be different. But, you know, it'd be 160. But the point is that, you know, it's getting more adopted. And so diminishing, I don't accept that. I accept that, you know, I'm with Sailor. We're going higher forever, Laura, and it's going to be a lot higher. and the ranges are just going to keep changing to the upside. But having said that, you know, anybody who does enter it has to come in fully aware of the volatility. I mean, I was very disappointed when in the 60s, you know, when a lot of people just say, oh, you know, mortgage the house, go crazy, buy 100%. And they didn't take the time to look at the prior 10 years or 13 years at the time, whatever it was, and realize it. No, hang on a second. You gotta be ready to, you know, okay, fine. I mean, I was buying at 69, no problem. I was dollar cost averaging, but I also knew that it could go down, you know, and it did. And I view that as this great, you know, at 15, 18, 20. Yeah, I love that. You know, I mean, I bought a lot in Thanksgiving of 2017. I don't know if anyone was around then, but you know, it pumped. It went from 1,000 to 17 in a relatively short period of time, and I bought a lot at 1,000 too. But you know, at 17, I was buying like crazy because I was going to 100, and of course, I was wrong. You know, it went to 10, and I thought, all right, well, I still believe, and I got some more money, and I doubled down. And then it went from 10 as, you know, very briefly, it touched like 3.8 or 4. I think I paid 4.5 for it. And I doubled down again. And so, you know, my view is, you know, there are only 21 million of these things. And, you know, 8 billion people and 45 million millionaires. And, you know, it's, I think that owning a lot of this stuff makes a shitload of sense. And, you know, we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
We're not wrong.
I think so, but I could be. I mean, you know, there are risks. I mean, the biggest risk, I think, until more recently, I always view the biggest risk as a technical risk. And I you know, maybe I'm underweighting it now, but I think, you know, 15 years, a lot of, you know, the block size wars, a lot of, you know, improvements in the technology, and I'm quite, you know, 800,000, nearly 800,000 blocks, et cetera. I'm quite comfortable that, you know, the technical risk is quite small at this stage.
Yeah. And then the big gets, the, you know, and the type of the caliber of people that we have on our side, yeah, you know, the minds that we have on our side that are on Team Bitcoin,
yeah,
you know, and then what's on the other side, like Team Government, like, you, yeah. I haven't, you know, seen someone.
Keynes, I mean, Team MMT, I mean, what are you going to take, Stephanie Kelton, you know, from Stony Brook U or whatever the fuck she's from? I mean, she's a fucking idiot. You know, are you going to take that woman who thinks that, you know, there's an unlimited supply of these things because you can slice them up, you know, like pizza? I mean, you know, it's hard to deal with some of the people in TradFi and how they view it. And I don't know, I, you know, they just make me mad. So I try to not focus on them as much as possible. But
I believe you could feed the world with one pizza.
Yeah, right. just slice it. It's an unlimited number of slices. Therefore, there's an unlimited amount. I mean, with Samantha LeDuc, right? Once she started down that line, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, this is a woman who's on CNBC. She's on Bloomberg. She gets all kinds of, I mean, I was just like, I mean, lady, could you, I mean, I was just like, you were like, you know, galactically stupid. I mean, you're just, I mean, it's very rare that I've seen a human being that stupid. I mean, it was just like, I can't believe she's saying that shit. So,
yeah, it's interesting, but it sounds like for us, it's nonsensical, right? But right, that is, if you believe in the fiat system, those are the types of things that you have to believe.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Like, oh, that's right.
One comes with the other.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Ari. If you had, you know, an investor, so a high net worth individual, he approaches you, says, hey, Larry, I have $1 million. I have $2 million. What percentage would you tell them to put into Bitcoin? How would you tell them to, if they wanted to get exposure to Bitcoin, how would you tell them to approach it? Ape in all at one time, DCA, take a percentage, put it into Bitcoin, yeah, take a percentage, put it into gold. What would be your approach?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll get to that in a second. I just want to respond to something in the text. Somebody said, please come back to X. We need your commentary. Yeah. No BS point of view. I would love to come back to X. X has, my account got hacked at X. It's now controlled by a malicious actor who's trying to sell crypto shit. One of the things you could do is you could go to X and report that, and report that my account has been hacked and that you're upset about that, et cetera, et cetera. Because anything I can do to get X to focus on restoring my account, I would love to have done. To your question, Nico, well, look, it depends on their age, depends on the risk tolerance, et cetera. I think everybody just should, right off the bat, if they've got none, they should take 10% of their investable assets and buy buy Bitcoin. Beyond that, I think you have to determine what your risk tolerance is, what your cash needs might be in the future, how long your time frame is, liquidity, et cetera, et cetera. But then, of course, I recommend just DCAing. I've just to answer the question I get asked a lot, because I'm still a gold guy and believe in gold, is that, you know, what's your balance, gold and Bitcoin? And I'm half and half. I'm half gold and gold related things, mostly gold mining stocks. And then I'm half Bitcoin. And this is for my investable assets. So, you know, and it really has to do with just the tolerance. Well, it has to do, one, with my legacy business. And I can't tell all my investors I've abandoned the thing that they've bought into. And then two, you know, I like having an asset that's less volatile and yet has protective capabilities versus, you know, the monetary printer. So, and that's why gold is of value. So.
Yeah, 100%. And I'm actually a big fan of physical gold. My father-in-law, you know, I got married recently, and my father-in-law, as one of the gifts, he gave me you know, my wife like a gold bar, a 1 ounce gold bar. And gold feels very nice. As a Bitcoiner, I'm saying this. I might get chewed up, but I'm sticking to it.
It's if you look at a gold
coin, it feels great.
Yeah, it's real, right? Gold coins are beautiful. Feels great. And they're heavy. Yeah, and they make
it heavy, and it feels good.
They have a neat ring when you ping them or you drop them. Yeah. So,
yeah.
They've got value. I mean, as I've always said, the reason they have gold coins is so you can bribe the border guards.
Yeah, that's true.
The border guards may not be smart enough to take, you know, lightning transactions. So
yeah, but they will definitely take.
You know, you go anywhere in the world and most people know what a gold coin is.
100%. So we got about 9 minutes left, sure, or so, Larry, and I do want to be respectful of your time. So, you know, we are entering into the, you know, the cycles, you know, I suspect that things are really going to start to heat up. They're heating up prematurely, right? Yeah. To be honest with you, I did not expect the run up. I have a feeling that the ETF played a lot into it. I have a feeling that a lot of people were disappointed by the last cycle. I think the CCP mining ban had a lot to do with that.
Yes, I agree.
The fact that we then hit the 100K level. And perhaps, you know, Bitcoin's playing a little bit of catch up here. So my question to you is, do you believe this cycle is going to be different?
Yeah, I do. I think we're going to run harder and further as a result of both the halving and the other cycle was driven by the halving, but I think the ETFs changed the game. And I also think we are at that tipping point where, you know, pretty much everyone in the country has now heard about Bitcoin. Okay. I mean, it's not like, I mean, whereas in the last couple of cycles in 17, nobody's heard about it. And in the one before, you know, the one after that, the last one, a lot of people had heard about it. Nobody had bought it. I don't know where we are in terms of penetration, number of people who own some of it. I still think it's probably lower than 10%. I think we're getting close maybe to 10% in the Western countries. And we cross that 10%. That's the tipping point book by Malcolm Gladwell that says any new adoption, once it crosses 10%, it really starts to accelerate in terms of adaptation. And you can see that in cell phones, cars, airplane, all of them. And so we're kind of at the point where I think the curve is going to get really steep. And so, you know, it's going to be different. It's going to be a nice, nice run. And, you know, I've seen projections for this run from everything. I mean, I think the low end of this run is 150. I'd be shocked if we stopped there, but we could. I think the high end is Samson's $1 million. I think the more likely, you know, I kind of guessing this cycle is kind of 300 to 500. You know, I'm guessing some of the old longtime holders, maybe even including myself, would part with a few coins at 500,000 a coin. You know, there's some fiat things I'd like to have that I might sell a coin or two for. But I mean, 100, nah, I'm not selling at 100. Screw that shit. I mean, that's you know, that's jacks for openers. I mean, we're going well past 100. So in my
100%.
Yeah, in my view. Yeah.
100%. The party's just getting started.
We're just this party is just getting started. And that's the beautiful thing. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I'm seeing some really smart people that are pretty cool kind of starting to get it. don't know if you know this guy, Quoth the Raven, Chris Irons, a very good financial commentator who I always knew he was too smart not to get it, but he was always very skeptical. I've been working on him for 2 years now. He has finally, he's all in Orange. It's unbelievable. He's out there pounding the table. He's on Twitter, by the way, Quoth the Raven. You know,
I think, oh, I know who you're talking. Yeah, he's a recent convert.
I totally converted him. I take credit for that. I take credit for that. And he's got a lot of followers. A very smart guy, good investor, big gold guy. But it was just, he was skeptical, but I just kept working on him. So, I'm not going to Bedford this April. I can't. I've got a conflict. Sorry. I just see things, questions in the chat.
No worries. It is a live show after all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel just as bullish as you do. Larry, I think this is the beginning of something great. I think the ETFs, the halving coming up, you know, the total clown world and the central banking aspect. But it's always an honor and a privilege to have you on Simply Bitcoin.
It's always fun to be with you, Nico. I think we're on the same wavelength in a lot of stuff. So.
I appreciate it, Larry. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. Guys, you can check out Larry's website, ema2.com. We have literally 309 people watching live right now. So if just a tenth of you went on Twitter and helped Larry get his account, that would be a
go
huge
on
help.
Twitter and report, send in a report and say, I know this account has been hacked and we want to be able to listen to this guy and we can't listen to this guy because this malicious crypto asshole has hacked his account. Please unwind that or please do what you can to pay attention to that. I would be deeply in your debt. Deeply in your debt. I've been trying very hard. It's my Twitter handle is just my name, @Lawrence, capital L, Lepard, capital L. Just right there on the lower left-hand corner. Yeah. Anyone who could go on there and report that, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Guys, there's 312 people watching right now. Like, if just a tenth of you guys did that, highly appreciate it.
I don't know if it'll have any impact. I mean, like I said, Twitter is the shell of its former self. There's nobody working there anymore. It's crazy.
It's just run by AI. Yeah. But yes, we need more voices. We need voices like Larry on Twitter because, you know, he adds so much signal, great perspective. So let's, you know, this is part of the fight, guys. Let's help get Larry's account back. Yeah. But like I said, Larry, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Happy to come back anytime. Thanks everybody who listened. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate it.
I added some value to the whole thing. So.
You always add value. Okay. Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
all right, guys. We'll see you.
Bye,
Larry. Take care. All right, guys. I'll see you tomorrow for a brand new episode of Simply Bitcoin Live. I hope you guys enjoyed the show. Peace out, everybody.